So, I've been thinking this week so much about, well, you don't know, I'm going to tell you. I've been thinking this week so much about how everything in life, you could think of it as a collaboration. I teach regularly, and people always think, oh, the teacher. Maybe you think this way, maybe you don't, but oh, the teacher, like, oh, the teacher's like, oh, but actually, I need you to show up for me to teach. So it's a kind of collaboration. It's us together. And that my entire life in some ways is a collaboration between my intention, which I'll talk about later, right? My intention and but also a collaboration with the sky and the trees and the water and the rain and the earth and the collaboration with all my friends and my family. It's this really amazing, beautiful thing. And the collaboration with the Dharma too. I listen to Dharma talks all the time and I write Dharma talks and I just love doing that because I continue to learn and we can learn and support each other. So everything is a big collaboration, life itself. And so the topic tonight actually is loving kindness, which is, I know many of you know, the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes. I think I probably talked about them last time I was here because I'm doing a whole 6 month deepening investigation and practice with the divine abodes, the Brahma Viharas. There are four qualities of the heart, four aspects of an awakened heart. And normally the first one is metta. The Pali word is metta. So the language of the Buddha, metta, it's Pali, and the word is metta. And it gets most often translated as loving kindness. Now, when I hear loving kindness, and maybe for you too, I think, oh, like if I practice enough loving kindness, I'm going to float away on a loving kind cloud. And there's just going to be loving kindness maybe poofing out of my ears like mushroom spores or something, right? Loving kindness. But actually, it's we can think about loving kindness or metta as an attitude through which we are meeting our lives. How it's an attitudinal meeting. So it's not an emotional state like, oh, with enough practice, I'm going to be in like loving kindness bliss, right? It's not an emotional state. It's an attitude through which I meet life or one can meet life. So I've been thinking about this word as friendliness, the word friendliness for us instead of loving kindness. In some ways, it could be translated as friendliness. And just because that word friendliness to me feels much more ordinary and daily, just like, oh, everyday friendliness, casual friendliness can actually make a huge impact on my day, whether I'm casually friendly with someone else or someone is casually friendly with me, let alone deep lasting friendships. Relationships in my life. So friendliness we can think about is very ordinary and daily. So to this collaboration idea, I actually want to hear if anybody is brave enough to unmute and speak or type in, what is your understanding of friendliness? So we'll move away from the word loving kindness for now, and let's talk about metta as friendliness. And when I say friendliness, what comes to mind for you? What does that evoke? What are the qualities? So we're defining together, we're collaborating and defining together. What is friendliness? What is it when I say the word friendliness? You can, I guess you could raise your hand or unmute you or type in and we'll see what we got. Go ahead, Mary. Let's see what we got.
Open-hearted acceptance.
Beautiful. Yes, open-hearted acceptance. What else? What else?
I see warmth and smiles.
Yeah, warmth and smiles. I've been thinking about this week too, how warmth is a word that goes with this quality. And I know I live in a very, well, not very cold, but a pretty cold environment. And so warmth, it's so like cozy. It's life-giving, really. And then what else? I saw Bill's hand up. Is that true? I don't
Oh,
know.
yeah, but somebody already said pretty much what I was going to say, so I'll pass for now.
Okay. What else? I can't see everybody on my screen, so I don't know if you raise your hand, you might have to. Oh, go ahead. And it says user, but I don't think your name is.
I have to apologize for that. I don't know how to fix it. Well, it was already said, but I want to say it again. A friendliness to me is warmth and connectivity. And I think that goes along with what Mary said about open-hearted acceptedness. Like, we're both here, we're both in the room, whether it's the cashier or my neighbor in the laundry room or whomever, just, hi, we're both here together. And we're sort of, you know, just in this together. We're equal.
Ah, so I hear connectedness. I hear connectedness and I hear non-judgment. Actually, I hear a big piece of non-judgment. What else? What else? Yeah, Patty, go ahead.
I think of the word welcoming. I remember when I moved to the Bay Area and hardly knew anybody, people who welcomed me and who made me feel welcome were exhibiting what I call friendliness.
Yeah, beautiful, welcoming. So this openness. So maybe another way to say that is letting go of, like, I don't know, do you all, I feel like sometimes I get blinders on and I get so like, I have to do this and this and this, right? But instead, like a welcoming and openness to whoever or whatever shows up in front of us. Anybody else? I'd love to hear your takes on it. Let's see, Linda.
I don't know how to say this in a non-negative way, but not adding to your difficulties. The other day I had a list of errands I had to run and it went so smoothly and it just seemed like I smiled and thanked everyone for being there. You know, I had to go to the post office and blah, 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 library. And just thanking people and appreciating them. And we were kind of working together in this. It was just almost like a dance in that day and not adding to someone's burden or the load they're already carrying.
Yeah. I hear respect in what you're describing, a kind of respect and care for each other.
Care.
Care. Yeah. Anybody else? I can't see everybody. Oh, Barbara. I see Barbara. I know.
Well-wishing.
Well-wishing.
Wanting
yeah.
joy and good things for others.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Can you all feel, can you feel like the sort of lightning? I'm feeling a lightning in my own heart just to even talk about it. Like, so that's nice. It's important to notice when that happens. It might not be happening for you. This is, you know, the human condition. But if it is happening, to let yourself be like a tuning fork to this quality. So tuning fork, when you hit a note, the tuning fork vibrates with it. So we're hitting the note tonight of friendliness and see if you can let your body and heart be a kind of tuning fork for it. And it may or may not happen. I don't mean to apply, I can't imply that it's an emotional state, but there is a gestalt to it. So if we can let ourselves tune to it, if that happens. And then Charles Lee, I don't think I'm saying your name right. I'm sorry. Can you say your name?
Sure. It's kind of slur it all together, Charles Lee, like an adjective or adverb.
Okay. And did you have some
apps? Yeah. Yeah. I think what I think of when I think of friendliness, I guess I think of a good friend is someone who is gentle with you when needed, but also can call you on your bullshit.
I like that you're bringing that out because that's pointing to the strength of the quality of friendliness, like that we can call, like that we can have each other's best interest. And sometimes it, right? Like call each other out, like we need to, or ourselves sometimes too, but done with somebody said in the chat, somebody saying trust, right? Somebody I don't trust who's going to call me out on my stuff, that's not going to feel so awesome and maybe not feel so friendly. But trust is basic to friendliness. I love that too. These are great things that we can really, and giving each other the benefit of doubt. That's beautiful too. Giving each other the benefit of the doubt. Vita, did you have something? Yeah.
Yeah. Somehow this fits for me. So you mentioned the word intention. I have a very good friend who has a great deal of conflict with another woman who she's put in contact with frequently, and they are just clawed at each other. And I just got an email from her this evening saying, because of a person that they both care for, which is why they're always in contact, they've decided to be kind to each other. And they both have apologized, and they both feel relieved and happy for somehow that the intention of caring for each other and letting things go somehow. That's it.
That's beautiful. I love that you're pulling in intention, because I am going to talk about intention a little bit tonight too. And that how powerful that can be. And just to note that we will probably all of us need to keep coming back to our intention again and again and again, because intentions need to be in the moment each time. So the Dalai Lama, one of my favorite people to quote, said, "Love and compassion are necessities, not luxuries. Without them, humanity cannot survive." So love and compassion. He's talking about these heart qualities, these Brahma Viharas, the friendliness. It's a necessity, not a luxury. Without them, humanity cannot survive. Like, we need this quality. It's like water. Think about the earth when there's been drought and how the ground can get all cracked and dry, and the water, right? The water for the dry earth. We could think of friendliness as water for our dry hearts. And then there's another Dalai Lama quote, which I know many of you have heard, where he says, "My religion is kindness." So I think this is very interesting. Someone who has been practicing, doing meditation and mindfulness practices and other Tibetan Buddhist Vajrayana practices for decades, who I would, in my mind, assume is advanced, devotes himself to kindness. He doesn't say, "My religion is what a meditative practice." It's, "My religion, my devotion is kindness." Isn't that beautiful? I think that's quite beautiful. So friendliness, it can break up the hard spots, the tight spots, the places where we're clinging on, the places where we're tight and suffering. We have all these knots in us, and it could be like a physical, like an actual knot in your muscle maybe, but also just knots in the heart. Sometimes that can happen, where we get all tied up, and that this quality of friendliness actually dissolves those knots, that it melts them. So often we see something in ourselves that we don't like, or we see something in someone else that we don't like, and we actually have quite a bit of aversion to it, quite a bit of judgment. So we could talk about judgment is ranging from this small little like momentary flutter of irritation all the way to war. It's a spectrum. And that all of this aversion, irritation, war, anger, hatred, that love will melt that. That friendliness actually melts that. That's warmth. And we could think of the metaphor of these frozen spots, right? Frozen spots, these places in our hearts where we're wounded and the heart freezes and the mind freezes. And how do we melt it? We melt it with the warmth of friendliness. So the quote from the Buddha, which I know you also know these quotes, this one, hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone. So hatred is a strong word, but what about irritation never ceases by more irritation, right? Like we do this all the time. Oh, wow. Like it knots up in itself. Irritation never ceases by irritation, but by love alone. Hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone. Pema Chodron talks about the path of practice being a path where we're getting more and more in touch with our tender spots, that that there is a kind of vulnerability and openness that can happen through practice, and that can only be done with friendliness, with compassion, bit by bit by bit, at our own pace. If it takes decades, to go back to the Dalai Lama, he says, look at your practice in terms of decades, so that it's a slow melting in our own pace and in our own way with the warmth of friendliness. So neither we nor the world can actually really afford hatred. And we can see how I had some, this is horrible to admit, but I'm going to admit it. I'm just going to admit it. I had some friends staying here. We have a guest apartment, and some friends needed a place to stay. So they came and stayed for a couple months. And I found myself actually being quite judgmental and like a vague undertone of irritation with them for most of the 2 months. And I have to say, it was really painful. It was really very, very painful. And it's important to begin to notice that, to begin to notice how painful the states of ill will and the state of aversion, so that we can actually feel it, so that we can move away from those states. So neither we personally nor the world can afford hatred. So from Nelson Mandela, no one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. And I would say that our world actually can't afford right now this kind of hatred that's happening, that we are called, each and every one of us are called to cultivate this intention of friendliness. So like I was saying, it's not in an emotional or transient state. It's an attitudinal commitment brought to all moments of experience. It's not necessarily how we feel. We might not always feel friendly. I know I don't always feel, I just admitted for 2 months I was feeling very unfriendly for a lot of it. And so it's how we meet, how can I meet myself within that? And how can I meet my experience and how can I meet the world? So it's a training and how we're relating to each moment. And in this way, it's a great partner with mindfulness. Right, this mantra that we work with in the meditation, may I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend, that's bringing together mindfulness or presence and friendliness. So I don't know about for you, but when my mind is in a judgmental state, when my mind is in a constricted, constricted is a word that really actually explains how it feels, where it's tight, this small or tight spot, that I've just lost my thread. Oh, I'll take a drink of water. I have no idea what I was going to say, but I'm sure it was very profound. At any rate, partnering mindfulness and friendliness, partnering mindfulness and friendliness. So I know when my mind is in a constricted state, I can't see clearly. It's like putting on a pair of glasses, and instead of the lens being clear, it's a lens of judgments, right? Does that happen to you, where the mind gets really tight and it doesn't even see the whole story? So in some ways we need friendliness so that we can see clearly. And when we can see clearly, then we can see that things are always changing. So we'll tell our loved ones that we love them and maybe let go of the petty things, right? So that we can see clearly that everything's changing and everything is a big collaboration arising in concert with everything else. So that mindfulness and friendliness come together. I've heard some teachers talk about how actually friendliness is not different than mindfulness. And in some ways, that's my experience too. And maybe if we were in person, we could have a great debate about the qualities of mindfulness and friendliness and how different are they? Are they maybe two sides to the same coin? Are they just pulling out two aspects of presence? I think that would be an interesting thing to talk about, but I'm not going to talk about it. But maybe we could next time I see you. So we can think of this quality of friendliness as a way of being in the world. So we can, every moment, every action that we do has an intention behind it. I take a drink of water to soothe myself and to soothe my throat. So that's a little moment of intention, right? So everything we do, there's an intention behind. And sometimes we might have beautiful aspirations. Yes, I heard this Dharma talk on friendliness and I would like to be really friendly. So that's a beautiful aspiration, but we need to bring it into each moment. So this is how it's pairing with mindfulness. So I need to know when the email comes in and I get upset and I get tied in a little bit of a knot, I have to remember in the moment. So it's always in the moment. It can be practiced in any moment at any time, this quality of friendliness. May I meet this moment fully, may I meet it as a friend. So this intention again and again and again, we might practice this friendly intention of meeting the moment with friendliness. So it's a verb, it's a befriending, it's an action, it's something that we do. It's not a state that necessarily, it could descend over us. I know I wake up some days and feel much more friendly, but it's also a cultivation that we can cultivate through intention. And that we can begin to befriend the 10,000, as Jack Kornfield says, the 10,000 sorrows and 10,000 joys. So we have in the English language this unfortunate for this teaching choice when we say something like, oh, I love chocolate. I do love chocolate. But that's not the same thing. I am friendly with chocolate, but it's a separate thing, right? When we're talking about this attitude of befriending, it's befriending the lovely and the challenging. So I think it was Vita who was talking about these two friends that have had a difficult relationship and this intention of friendliness, even within the difficulty, right? So it's not just about getting everything plums and roses or chocolates and roses. Oh, it's coming on Valentine's Day all the time, but it's really meeting all of the challenges. So that's why in the meditation, I always like to remind people at some point that if something becomes difficult, if something becomes difficult all the time, like I can be awake for 5 minutes and something has become difficult. Sometimes I wake up with something difficult. So we can practice in our meditation. If something becomes difficult, can we find a way to find empathy for ourselves? Find sympathy for himself. I'm not sure I need to look up which word I mean, empathy or sympathy, but I mean a kind of softening, a kind of inner holding around the difficulty so that we can practice that in meditation or we can practice that when, when the meal doesn't turn out exactly as you'd like or you burned the toast or your partner forgot to put the damper on the wood stove, which I realize is not a very urban urban thing, but that happened today, right? Or whenever something happens, right? So we practice meeting it with some friendliness. It's not about loving all situations and it's not about always getting our own way. And we don't have to love the difficult, but we can care and befriend it. because that is what it is to be human. We have these waves of pleasure and then pain, these eight worldly winds. Everything is shifting all the time. We could also think of it as a training in seeing everyone, seeing people through the eyes of respect and tolerance. Or how about when we sit down to meditate with our minds, instead of being annoyed with the thinking mind, how about affectionate curiosity? Ah, affectionate curiosity. Oh, I see you, mind. Ah, you seem to be worried about this thing. Thank you, mind. Ah, right, affectionate curiosity. So interested, right? In the same way that all these lovely things that we talked about when we were talking about, when I was asking you about friendliness, in the same way, approaching our own minds when we sit down to meditate, rather than as a taskmaster and must get back to the breath, like this affectionate curiosity, this openness. And this also, Charles Lee mentioned calling ourselves on our own BS. So that's the being willing to let go and come back. And we do that not as a punishment, not because the thinking is wrong, but actually as a care to have our own self-interest, our own best self-interest, not self-interest like I'm going to sit on the couch and eat ice cream all day. Like that's actually not super healthy to do, right? But the come back to the breath in my own self-interest out of care for myself, care for my poor mind. My poor mind needs some love sometimes, just keep coming back. So affectionate curiosity with ourselves and with each other. So how do we do this friendliness thing? How do we do it? I think one is wise intention. So remembering each moment, just like the mantra, may I meet this moment as a friend. So coming back and practicing that as many times as you need to. So letting it be like a rudder on a boat that's steering your boat, that's your life in this metaphor, in the direction that you want it to go. And that's your intention of friendliness and coming back in each moment. Again, it's in the moment. And then remembering that intentions don't always lead to outcomes because life is a big collaboration, right? So just there's so many things we can't always control. And that we can remember. So the question is, I have three. So how are we cultivating friendliness? One is with our intention of friendliness. Two is with wisdom. So we're remembering like the little wise inner teacher. I know you have one. I have one. Everybody has one, a little wise inner teacher, that it's not about everything being beautiful. It's really about learning to respect what's here, to be friendly with what's here, to remember that it's not personal. So many times we take so many things personally. Oh, like for me, how many people came to my class? Oh, three less people came. It must have been I did something wrong. It's not personal. It's just how things are, right? This is life. It unfolds in its own way. So this one, we practice cultivating friendliness through our intention. And two is through wisdom, whether it's through our inner self-talk or listening to a Dharma talk, or finding ways to contact our own inner authority and wisdom. And three, which is a subset of two really, is to reframe the story about the situation. This can be really helpful sometimes, and I'm talking about challenging situations, is to reframe the story about the situation. So I'm gonna tell a story on me. I have another story on me to tell to really highlight these three different ways to practice friendliness. So I moved right before the pandemic up to Northern California to open a retreat center. I think I've been telling you all this. And it turns out that moving somewhere during a pandemic doesn't lead to making new friends and meeting people. It turns out, imagine that. So, you know, in the pandemic, it's been 2 years now. It's almost 2 years. We're coming on 2 years. And so I decided there's a local community college and there's a mushroom identification class. And I thought this sounded really interesting. Mushroom identification class. It meets mostly outside, like you go on little field trips and you go look for mushrooms. I thought it sounded really fun. So my intention for the class is actually not first to learn about mushrooms. The first intention, the highest intention for me in the class is friendliness, in part because I wanted to meet friends. Now, notice that wanting to meet friends is an outcome. I can't have control over the outcome, but I can have control over my intention. So the first class met maybe a week and a half ago. It was the first meeting of the class, and I went, and the first part of the class was indoors. And so I had on the Omicron surge is a little behind the Bay Area. So a week and a half ago, the case numbers up here were sky high. So I put on my N95 mask and I go to this indoor class, and there's, you know, maybe 13 people there. And I couldn't breathe because the mask was a stronger mask than I usually wear. And it was squeezing my nose so much. It was kind of pinching my nose and pushing down. And I couldn't breathe very well. And I started to get a headache. And I was like, oh, it's so hard to be friendly when you're in pain and your head's hurting and you can't breathe, right? And also the mask, let alone an N95 that was squeezing my nose, let alone that, just everybody's faces being covered, it kind of blocks friendliness too. And I was like, how can I be friendly with this mask? And I can't see people's faces very well. But my intention was friendliness, and it was quite strong intention, in part because I've been teaching friendliness, in part because I want to make friends, in part just as a practice, right? This is my practice. So so I'm like, okay, I can be friendly with myself. I know my head's not feeling well because of the mask, but I can still smile at people because you can see smiles. Like, we know this at this point, that we can see smiles even with the mask on. And there was some friendliness, and then things shifted. So we went outside for the next part of the class, and I was able to switch to a more comfortable mask because we were outside. And it turns out there was this woman in the class. She was probably, it's a nice class. It's a big mix of ages, from like 19-year-olds, people just out of high school going into community college, all the way up to people in their 70s. So it's a really, it's actually an interesting diversity in a different way. I thought that, like, an age diversity. So there's a young woman there in the class, and she's probably 19. I mean, I don't know. And she was very enthusiastic, like very. So the teacher hadn't even started talking more than 5 minutes, and she was interrupting the teacher and just making sure that the teacher and all of us knew that she loves mushrooms, and she already knows a lot about mushrooms, and she's very enthusiastic about mushrooms. And I became, I'll admit it, a little annoyed with her as the class went on, because she was like woohooing and, like, anyway. So I was finding her a little annoying. And there it was, my intention of friendliness. And I knew, and so this is the wise intention is step one of friendliness. Step two is remembering, like, oh yeah, this situation will shift, right? Like, it'll shift and change. It's not like a permanent forever thing. She might be. So step three is reframe. And so I reframed the story I was telling myself. Because so often when we get irritated with ourselves or someone else, we tell a story about it that's maybe true, maybe not true, but probably not completely true, because our minds like to reinforce our own irritation. So what I did is I reframed the story I was telling myself about this young woman to, from like, oh, she's a really annoying person, and how can she interrupt the teacher? And I came to talk, to listen to the teacher. I didn't come to listen to some 19-year-old, blah, 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 you know, like, whatever, right? So I reframed the story about her to, oh, she's really young. She's got a big personality. I'm familiar with having a big personality. She hasn't learned to deal with it yet because she's so young and she might be a little nervous. You know, it's a vulnerable situation. First day of class. It's a little nerve wracking. Maybe she's nervous. I don't know. Maybe she is. And sometimes when people are nervous, they can get louder, right? Some people get quieter. Some people get louder when they get nervous. So I reframed my story I was telling myself about her. So that then I wasn't necessarily like wanting to be best friends with her. Friendliness doesn't mean that we don't have boundaries, but it does mean that I quit pushing her out of my heart. So that hardness, that tightness in my own mind and heart softened. I didn't have to be best friends with her, but I didn't have to care so much. And I even did like ask her the name once we went out into the woods. Like I found a mushroom and I asked her what it was so that I could know that that was meeting her where she was, right? So a kind of friendliness. So the story is our intention, and we have to come back to it again and again. So going into the class, oh, I'm going to be friendly, but then there's obstacles, the mask and the person. So I have to keep coming back, right? We have to keep coming back again and again and again to the intention of friendliness. We have to remember Dharma wisdom, that everything's impermanent, that most of the stuff that happens isn't so personal to us, if not all of the stuff, and that it's going to change. It's going to change. That's what I mean by impermanent. And that we can, step three, reframe the story we're telling ourselves about the other person, about the situation, about ourselves. And so that with those methods, they can support us in the cultivation of friendliness. So I want to finish. I have two ways to finish. I have to decide. There's not enough time for both. Do you want to hear, since it's a collaboration, do you want to hear the benefits of practicing the 11 from the suttas, the 11 benefits of loving kindness, or the metta, the friendliness sutta itself? Oh my God, to choose. I have to choose because you all are on mute. I'm going to read the metta sutta. So remember metta, I'm translating this word metta as friendliness, the friendliness sutta from the Buddha. To reach the state of peace, one skilled in the good should be capable and upright, easy to speak to and straightforward. Doesn't that sound like friendliness? Easy to speak to and straightforward, of gentle nature and not proud, contented and easily supported, living lightly and having few duties, wise and with senses calmed, not arrogant and without greed for supporters, and should not do the least thing that the wise would reproach them for. One should reflect in this way. May all beings be happy and secure. May all beings be happy-minded, whatever living beings there may be, whether weak or strong, tall, large, medium, or short, small, or big. Seen or unseen, near or distant, born or to be born, may they, without exception, all be happy-minded. Let no one despise another or deceive anyone anywhere. Let no one through anger or hatred wish for another's suffering. As a mother would risk her own life to protect her child, her only child, so for all beings, one should guard one's boundless heart. With boundless friendliness for the whole world, should one cultivate a boundless heart in all directions, without obstruction, without hate, and without ill will, standing or walking, sitting or lying down. Whenever one is awake, may one stay with this recollection. This is called the best and the most sublime way of dealing in this world. Dwelling. This is called the best and most sublime way of dwelling in this world. One who is virtuous, endowed with insight, not clinging to wrong views, and having overcome all passion for sensual pleasure, will not come to lie in a womb again. So I want to bring out, I'm going to read a little bit again. Whatever living beings there may be, whether weak or strong. So this is radical. This is radical. Whether rich or poor, I'm going to elaborate. Whether rich or poor, whatever class, whatever race, whatever gender or in between genders, whatever living beings there may be, whether weak or strong, tall, large, medium, or short, small or big, seen or unseen. So we can include here all the angels, guardian angels and spirits and fairies of the lands, seen or unseen, near or distant, born or to be born. May they, without exception, all be happy-minded. So it's just so beautiful. I think it's so beautiful. May all beings be happy and secure. May all beings be happy-minded. May it be so.